Hey everyone, welcome to the Sneaker History Podcast, where we dive into the people, stories, and iconic moments that have helped make sneakers a global phenomenon. If you've ever told someone that you like their kicks, then you're in the right place. Before we lace up this episode, here's a little teaser for you. Stick around to the end of each episode for the last shot question. It's a chance to test your sneaker knowledge and engage with our community. I've also recently started a newsletter to share my knowledge from nearly two decades of experience working in the footwear industry. You can find the link to that below or go to sneakerhistory.com/newsletter for a weekly deep dive into the biggest topics in the sneaker business. All right, now that the business is taken care of, grab your favorite pair of kicks and let's get started with the episode.
Jordan trying to shake off Starks. Oh, what a move!
Against Gill, the crowd on its feet. Allen for the win!
Welcome to the Sneaker History Podcast.
What up, what up? Welcome back to the Sneaker History Podcast, where we're just a few guys that like to talk about sneakers. So, my name's Nick Engvall, and I'm here with two of my favorite guys to talk sneakers with. Guys, why don't you introduce yourself?
Hey, what's going on, everybody? It's Mike Guillory here. Glad to be here sitting with my two fellows talking some sneakers. Robbie, what's going on, man?
Another beautiful, I almost said it's Tuesday, but it's Monday. Another great day to talk about sneakers.
Yeah, so before we get into all the conversation, as we like to do, we're just going to shout out Jay Cousteau for the 5-star review on iTunes. Thanks for leaving us the review and supporting the show. Definitely appreciate you. And if you have time to leave us a review on iTunes, we definitely would appreciate that. It helps us get in front of a new audience and just encourages us to keep it going.
Yes, sir. Thank you, guys. Appreciate y'all.
So before we get into like the main topic, I think one of the things I wanted to talk about this week that I thought was just cool is that it was either today or yesterday that Jordan Brand kind of did like a summer preview for the women's releases. And I just don't think I've seen that before. You know, the guys' releases kind of always get the previews all over the web. You know, they'll have, you know, 2-3 months worth of retros lined up and you'll see them. But it was cool to see, you know, those like black and white Jordan 1 highs, the pink snake skins, those, I forget what the nickname on those black and gold 12s are, but I think those are super clean. And obviously they've got a few different ones and stuff like that coming down the line. And I just thought it was cool. I think it deserved a shout out. I feel like women's releases just don't get the love that the guys' releases do, even though now they're getting some unique stuff and the colorways are pretty solid on like the traditional stuff. And they're even doing like the, you know, the Jordan 3 RTR EXP thing with like the crazy high, I don't know what you would call that, like kind of zip. It almost reminds me of like
a boot.
Yeah, it's like a boot or a sock or something, but it reminds overshoe. Me a lot of the overshoe. It reminds me that it's like a combination of the overshoe and the Special Forces Air Force Ones that were pretty hot the last couple of years. So
yeah.
I don't have a way to cop any of these in my size, unfortunately, but if I could.
I mean, I'm lucky enough I can find a size 11.5, 12 in that black and white Jordan 1, it may happen, but they'll go pretty quickly because guys will scoop them up in those large sizes pretty fast.
I mean, it kind of beckons back to way back in the day when like Aqua, not Aqua 8, but like the women's Aqua 8.
Yeah.
And like Miss Blue and like Storm Blues, like the 3s and 4s. How now Jordan Brand has men again talking about how they wish they had smaller feet or they made these shoes in bigger sizes. So
yep.
That's super dope.
Yeah, I think so too. And then
Sunset 5.
That's a good one. That's actually a really, that's a dope colorway.
That's a gorgeous shoe.
Yep.
I'm trying to pull them up right now. Let's see. My computer's running a little slow, guys.
Kanye West, damn, they don't make them like this anymore.
Yeah.
Those sunsets, man. Oof.
There we go. Yeah, I'm looking at, I'm actually really liking those 12, the black and gold. It looks simple.
Oh, no, those are nice. Oh.
Yeah.
They have like two different reptile prints.
Yeah.
It's yeah. Like
snake and.
Yeah, and I just think that it's getting to the point where we should be pretty close to equal on these releases at this point, right? Like, there's so many good releases that the guys get, and it's definitely moving in the right direction for the women's releases, but I still think they're kind of, you know, like forgotten in a lot of ways. But this is just cool to see.
I mean, it's a good step forward, though, because I can't remember what YouTuber I was watching the other day, and please forgive me, don't mean to not give you your credit, but they pointed out a pretty cool detail of New Jordan 4. The bread is that when they made the women's version last time, I guess 2012, women's version, aka the kid version, the midsole was different than the men's sizes. And now they've actually collected that to where both the sizes that women would fit in and the men's sizes are going to be pretty hand in hand the same. So that's cool. I'm glad Jordan's actually showing some love with some pretty accurate retros from women, because a lot of times, like last summer, they did this big release for women, but it's a bunch of weird things, like the Jordan 1 Rebel. They had those Jordan 1 Jesters. Like, it wasn't a true not true releases for them, or not true retros, as to say, but they just gesture here, but they were just full of those last year, and it wasn't anything true to form. So it was really cool that they've kind of figured out and actually listened to their female customers to give them something they actually want. And nothing here is just purely pink, which is good for them.
Yeah.
That's interesting, because I know when I worked at Foot Locker, so many ladies would be like, why do you got these bootleg blanks? Because like the midsoles aren't the same. And even, especially with Nike touring, they will take out airbags. Grade school sizes to like make it fit better. I mean, like the silhouette fit better on a smaller foot. But I'm not mad at all at women getting gender exclusive shoes, because there's been so many years of ladies getting left out of really, really popular exclusives that only come in men's sizes. And Jordan's addressed that to where, you know, you see full, even like baby size hot shoes, like baby size Off-White. But there was a point where it was just men's sizes or nothing for a lot of limited things. So it's a good look to even out the playing field. So I'm not salty that I can't get them. You know, let them have theirs in a positive way.
Yeah.
Yep.
No, that's a good way to look at it, man. They deserve it. Like, treat them like the sneaker heads that we are. Shouldn't be any problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So another news thing. I don't know how I feel about this one, honestly. Like, just gonna throw out the undefeated Ultra Boost that we were talking a little bit about before, and I'm a big fan of the Ultra Boost, especially the 1.0. The original like fit was a little bit more snug, and I like that a lot more than the kind of like woven stuff and the as it progressed into the more modern versions, I guess. I know a lot of people look at the Ultra Boost and just see like one silhouette, and it hasn't really changed. But if you wore them a lot, there's definitely a difference in the way that they fit and feel. But I also think, you know, this particular undefeated collab is like, okay, cool. It's a white shoe with the red 5 stripes on it. It's almost, I don't know. I love the Ultra Boost. It's one of my favorite shoes. I still wear it because it's just easy to slip on and it's super comfortable. And I know like style wise is definitely not trendy right now the way it was, you know, 2, 3, 5 years ago, whenever that first dropped. But I can't help but think that they're like actually hurting the Ultra Boost brand by almost dropping the same kind of collab as they just did. You know, the first version of the Ultra Boost undefeated collab was just an all white with the black five stripes and all black with the white five stripes, right? So,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think I need to see some more effort here.
It doesn't hurt the ultra boost in my efforts undefeated more. Like, if it even hurts, like, I agree. It's too simple. I don't care to buy it, but it's really lacking in like the thoughtfulness, one of our favorite words here, but like the thoughtfulness mm-hmm. department.
So
like the insole's cool. Like the sock liner is dope. Mm-hmm. But you're not going to see that. It's too little. And, just to not digress too much, Nick, I agree the same way about the different feels of the Ultra Boost. And I think it's the ankle. So like in the newer versions, everything after V1 has like full prime knit all around. And the V1 had like almost like a Climacool type feel around the ankle that kept it snug.
Yeah.
So I think that's why they fit differently. But this undefeated one, it's a miss for me.
So
what are you feeling, Mike?
I'm in the same boat with you guys. I love the Ultra Boost 1.0. I think it's the best one. I think we can all pretty much echo the same thing that 1.0 was the best one they made. I just don't see the effort behind this one. I love Undefeated. That's one of my favorite brands, and it's just kind of, I guess, disappointing. I mean, it's not something I'm going to go after. It's going to be one of those shoes that if it sits around for a while on a resale site, because they're going to sell out. Undefeated is not going to have anything sitting around, but if they end up selling out because people don't want them because they're so simple, it'd be a shoe I scoop up for under retail. But it looks like a July 4th shoe or maybe a Memorial Day shoe from looking at there's an American flag branding on the heel tab.
Yeah, and it looks like the supposedly one of the left shoes red and the right shoe is blue. With the five strikes, so
yeah.
Oh yeah. So it's not enough to make me want to jump in and go get it. I mean, there's some pretty inline Ultra Boosts that are gonna have more details and nicer colors, I think.
Yeah, Robbie. Yeah. So what do you explain a little bit more what you think about how it hurts Undefeated more than Adidas? Because I think you might be onto something there, and I don't know that like maybe our listeners think about these kind of things.
Yeah, I mean, my thought behind it is, like, Undefeated is one of those, like, highly credited and accessible brands in the streetwear game. Like, their price tags aren't crazy to where somebody with a family and a normal job could go buy a shirt. And having just such a plain, like, having such a plain-looking shoe, it kind of takes away the specialness of the five stripes. I get five stripes. It's like some of my Undefeated items are just really simple black beanies or a black t-shirt with the stripes on it, but it's like it's not branded with anything else. Like most of their collabs has some level of, I mean, it's like some level of nuance that makes it collaborative or special, and these don't feel special. It just feels like if Undefeated bought Adidas for a day and released their own shoe, they would just put five stripes on it and call it a day.
Yeah.
But it's like Adidas gets a good look because they're working with a brand. They get to say, oh, we have a new Undefeated Ultra Boost coming out. That helps them. But if these shoes are sold to Undefeated and somebody walks in, they're going to be like, why? No, I don't want these. I'm going to buy three t-shirts instead. Or, you know, yeah. It's just, it's not using the name or the logo to the best of its ability or capability in my book.
Yeah. I like that take on it. Mike, do you not even talking about this particular one, just kind of continue on the subject, 'cause I think it's fascinating to me. Do you think the brand or like the boutique or the collaborator is, I guess, held more accountable, more on the hook for like the cool factor of a shoe or like the hype factor of a shoe?
I think it comes back to the shoe brand, because a lot of times you will hear that the collaborator has an automatic cop out a lot of times is, oh, I couldn't do much of the shoe. This is what they let me do. So I don't know if that's the story, but that's just kind of one of those built in safety nets that collaborators have that they go to, like they weren't given enough freedom for it. So I completely understand what Rob is saying, and I actually partly agree. I think if I went undefeated and saw these, I would rather go buy like a crew neck or something. I actually like them undefeated as opposed to these. But I feel like Adidas is going to catch more flack in the world of social media because people are going to just strictly like, oh, Adidas again with the, you know, the thoughtless collaboration. It's going to be always pointed at the shoemaker, I feel like, and just going to hear, oh, this is why Nike's beating you. Oh, this is why this brand's, you know, so on and so forth. That's why nobody's buying Ultra Boost anymore. You guys didn't even, you know, give us something that we wanted. So I think Adidas is going to take more of a hit if there is a hit to be taken.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But like, I know I'm big into the word collaborator, so it comes on to both. It's like take two to tango type deal.
Yeah.
Yeah, most definitely. And I think you called it with like this particular one. I feel like it's really lazy to just throw the five strikes on there. And I do think that, you know, depending on, you know, Mike has a great point, right? Like we've heard the story repeatedly from smaller boutiques and maybe not, you know, maybe not undefeated level, but if you're, you know, first, second, third, fourth time collaborating with a major brand, you don't have the freedom that say, you know, Kith, Undefeated, Bodega, maybe Concepts, these guys that have been doing this for, you know, decades, and have the following and the clout of, you know, to make something that people wouldn't even pay attention to cool again. And so I think there's arguments on both sides of this. And that said, I think just want to toss this out to our fellow sneaker historians that are listening and ask, like, what do you think? Does, when it comes down to a collaboration, is it the brand that's held more accountable, or is it the smaller boutique collaborator, you know, artist that's held more accountable? And like, how do you guys feel about that whole thing? But shifting gears, I guess I don't want to not talk about this whole Jordan Bread 4 toast video, Bread 4 Rising, because I feel like I try not to complain about a lot of things and let people do their stuff. I also just think that the fact that like Jordan Brand is officially, you know, making the bread references and the baking references and, you know, I always think of black and red colorways as playoffs. I think Michael played. Yeah. I think Michael also played in the All-Star game in this shoe, right? So, I see everybody's arguments to it, but I just think it's really, really interesting that Jordan Brand is calling it the Bread 4 and making those like toast references in the video that they posted on Twitter. I still prefer it as just the black and red 4, I think, but maybe I'm just old. What do you guys think?
go ahead, Robbie.
No, I mean, I'm just thinking like, I've heard that argument so many different times, like, oh, the playoff, not friends, you dummy, or like vice versa. But like, in my book, I never call the red 11s, they're playoff 11s, because those are like the playoff 11s in my book. And they are bread fours, bread ones. Yeah, I mean, I'm on the bread team except for the 11. That's just my take on it. So, Mike, what were you going to say?
Oh, I was going to say that, you know, typically that doesn't bother me, either the bread or playoff. I mean, because every shoe has 12 different names. Like, you can go back to this four, that's a playoff four. Bread for black cement for there's so many names. I mean, it's cool. That's perfectly fine. I am just tired of seeing people with literal like baked bread references to these shoes.
You know, on IG, red.
Yeah.
I guess. I mean, it was funny the first time, but now a million times later, I saw somebody like put their Bread 4 into a plastic wrapper in a grocery store and pull it out, making some video, talk about, oh, that's the bread I was looking for. I was so cringeworthy. I couldn't even laugh. It was so cringeworthy.
Yeah, I mean, I can't lie. Like, deep down inside, I'm one corny mofo, right? But but this particular thing is just one of those things where I just feel like, come on, man. Like, I don't need to see a loaf of bread. I don't need to see, like, grapes. I don't need to see you eat, you know, Wheaties out of some, or Fruity Pebbles out of some LeBrons. God, yeah. All the crazy things that people do for attention. But that's also just not my style. So I don't really care if you're going to do that. It's like, do your thing. Like, it's not for me. I definitely come from the side of things where we never shortened it when we were writing it, and it became a thing because of Twitter, right? And you couldn't fit all the characters into your post or something, and I think that's the reason why it just became shortened. And I totally get that it's easier that, you know, the black X red equals bread kind of mentality that Jordan Brand is pushing here. But I thought it was really interesting, because I also, and maybe this is like really the nostalgia kicking in for me, I always think of Jordan, Michael, and the brand as being the one that sets the tone for everything else. And, you know, what comes to mind is that Jay-Z line, swag like a ball player, right? Like, every rapper references Michael Jordan for a reason. And he was everything that, you know, we all wanted to be. And I don't think that, I think of the brand as always kind of portraying him and portraying his mentality, his approach to the game, his approach to, you know, and it's hard too, because now that you've seen him older and off the court, you're looking and it's like, you know, he's like the king of mom jeans, and he's, you know, like always got like ridiculously baggy pants and, you know, covering his shoes and all the things that like the internet world has kind of turned against in the past like 5-10 years. But I think this is really interesting, like almost like a turning point, right? And, you know, like the 23 grain bread home recipe that they reference in the, you know, video is, you know, quarter cup go to work, 2 tablespoons of do the right thing, 1/2 cup of score at will, 2/3 of take flight, 5/8 of kick ass, 2 cups of scare the living shit out of opposing coaches, and 1 cup of giving it the best you got. Which I think that's pretty dope, right? Like,
I give him that one.
But those are all things that I feel like don't have a place in the like whole playing on bread and playing on the internet kind of mentality of, I don't know, doing things for attention, you know? So that to me is where like the conflict inside is like, I always look at Jordan Brand as like primarily they're setting the tone for, you know, hype, marketing, you know, storytelling, full on commercials are always some of the best. And everybody looks up to them the way that a lot of us as kids looked up to Michael Jordan playing. And I feel like this is like one step in a direction that where they're catering to the internet more than they're catering to their roots. So. Step off the soapbox now.
Well, it's like they have to cater. I mean, like, there's such high visibility on everything now that like you have to cater to the internet. Like, I have to consciously tell myself that begrudgingly, like, I don't like catering to the internet, but it's a dance you have to do, and Jordan does it pretty well. I mean, I like this bread stuff a lot more than like the Grail of Grails or whatever the 11 Concords were.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah. That was called the girl. Yeah.
So this felt, especially like the verbiage they use, it felt a lot cooler, like literally cool. But it's just like the 2019, got to make your sales, got to have that presence. It's just, I'll get off my soapbox too, but it's just all played. Let's go back to sending mailers in.
Well, to be fair, to be between both sides, we both, like, we all three of us know that even if Jordan just came out with a one-page picture just said Red 4, they're going to sell out. Even Jordan came out with nothing, just hey, from all the sneaker outlets, this is going to sell out. They didn't, I feel like they didn't even have to waste whatever marketing dollars for this because the shoe's been so anticipated that it's going to be gone in like a snap.
Yeah, I agree to a certain extent with that because, you know, like we're the people that are looking for that Nike Air on the back that are excited to have a chance to get it.
Yeah.
It's just interesting that they would try to combine the two things, right? Because they talk about, you know, they're showing all of his highlights, his shot over Craig Elo, all the things that as a, as an old school fan of Jordan, you know, Mars Blackman, Spike Lee, all that stuff is what, you know, what I like pull up in my mind when I want the shoe. But to me, the bread stuff in the same thing, I almost think that they would have been better off separating that whole, let's do this for the internet and let's do this for the old school, you know, kind of thing, especially with this one being the Nike Air. But I mean, I didn't mean to get too far down this tangent on this one, but I just think it's interesting. And I'm sure, like, you know, we probably have some interesting takes from the people that are listening. So if we'd love to hear what you guys think about this one. If you're feeling the bread nickname or the video that Jordan Brand posted, it's just at Jumpman23 on Twitter. You can check it out. I'm sure it's on their Instagram now too. So so let's hop into like the main subject that we actually wanted to talk about. Robbie, you want to jump into this since you had a pretty good idea of how we were going to talk about it.
Yeah. We'll kind of go in two rounds of circles here. So there are two big signature shoes set to debut this summer. You had the Freak One, the Giannis Antetokounmpo. I think I got that mostly right. He knows it's hard. So his shoe's coming out after much speculation. I think not that much speculation. We knew it was coming. But after much waiting, we're finally getting that here in August. And then Adidas has their young buck coming with the Spida. Adidas, based off of Utah's Donovan Mitchell. So my first question to us all is, you know, which one do we like more? Are we riding with Giannis and Team Nike? Or are we going with Donovan and Team Adidas?
Go ahead, Mike.
I guess
I actually liked it. From the pictures I've seen of both shoes, I actually like the Greek Freak one a little bit better. And only, I think probably the only reason I like it a little bit better, it takes some cues from like some of the Kobe models. Just probably some subtle inspiration. I like the way, just like the backwards swoosh on it. I really like the construction of the outsole. That's what I'm seeing in the picture. So, I mean, the Spider one isn't a bad looking shoe by any means. Just something about that, the Nike one just gives me a little extra, little push to try without one as well.
Mm-hmm.
So for me,
Nick, what about you?
Yeah, I'm probably more into the Giannis shoe. But that also might just be because of the color that leaked is a little more flashy and gives a little more a cooler look to it. I like the Donovan shoe quite a bit too. I mean, ideally I'll be able to pick up one of each of these just to kind of check them out and compare them to other stuff. But one thing that I really like about Donovan's shoe, two things I guess, is the shoe is going to be called like the Don, D-O-N. issue number one, which I think it's cool to, that they're just moving away from like his name, number one. Like against like, you know, the PG one, the Dame one, the Dame five, whatever. But the fact that you're calling it issue one adds a little bit of interestingness to it. And the other thing that I love about it is that the D-O-N of Don issue one is basically determination over negativity, which is, you know, his kind of mantra, so to speak. So that,
I know that.
Yeah, that's, I think, is a really interesting thing. And to have, as we get further into kind of the signature athletes, and I think there's going to be more and more signature shoes. I think that the brands are going to have to do smaller things to sell more. And I think that giving more character, more direct relation to the person that's behind the shoe or the name that's attached to the shoe and letting him have that personality is really awesome and admirable for a brand to do. So, you know, I'm kind of just excited for both of these, to be honest. How about you, Robbie?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this isn't going to be a curveball, but I like the Don issue one, I would say even way more, because here's a little homework for everybody. If you go and Google the Nike Hyperlive, I believe it's 2017 or 16, but it looks almost identical to the Freak One, just the Freak One has bolder Nike branding and a bolder midsole. Like, I'm really feeling the Don issue ones because of the shape. Like, we talk a lot about, you know, just how well put together a shoe is, you know, from the design team to the storytelling. And it just has such a new, young shape to it. It's just like new and young. It's something really different. And it's curvy, but it's still kind of technical looking. So I think it mixes a lot of things I like about Adidas and how they do certain aspects of footwear well within one model. And before we segue into like the next round question, the issue part is really cool because Donovan Mitchell, nickname is Spider, the logo kind of looks like Spider-Man, and then there's like issue, the like comic book, like X-Men issue one. So just like stuff like that. It's all really comes full circle and plays well with each other.
Yeah, I agree. So, I think that's like such a dope like tie-in to have all of those things.
And, right.
Looks like,
and, like but if it all press for it, they have like Spider-Man colored shoes.
And, like, yeah, that's what I was gonna say. Yeah, the red and blue and white. So like, that's a pretty good tie-in. And like the I don't know, okay, they have their own version of Flyknit going on there, and it's white like the weather, and so that's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. So, with that said, we have two, I guess, they're young, they're both young players, age-wise, and kind of in the amount of time they've been in the league. But you have these new guys coming up, and you have LeBron now in year 16 for Nike, and you have Derrick Rose, who, let's be honest, he's fantastic, and we love his story, but isn't where Adidas thought they would be, where he would be, and, you know, signature number nine now. So do you think these two new sets of athletes are going to be the next generation, or like the next up, so to speak, for each respective brand? Or are they just going to be, you know, two more horses in their respective stables?
I think for now, it's going to be kind of a two-sided answer. For now, Giannis is going to still be kind of unstable, I think. What's going to happen, I don't know the price point of Giannis' shoe. I'm going to assume it's going to be in that kind of the Kyrie price range of like 130-ish. And that's going to sell a shoe, of course. But I think right now, they're still going to be pushing those LeBrons. LeBron is having crazy marketing success with the LeBron watch. They started last year and he continued this year. It's winning. Now, on the Adidas side, I feel like Donovan's shoe is going to be the forefront signature. They're going to be pushing forward because he's such a dynamic player. He's explosive like Derrick Rose used to be. He's on a team that has potential like Derrick Rose used to be. So he's gonna slot D-Rose over and become the new face of defense basketball as soon as he launches, I think.
Yeah, I think it's the toughest thing about both of these guys is that they play in really small markets, right? And yeah. I hate that that's really a thing because, you know, like as a Kings fan, you're talking about the smallest market in California, basically, to have a professional sport. And it always is kind of like impossible for them to really get to the level that they need to be as far as, you know, a fan base nationwide to sell enough shoes. And, you know, the Bucks obviously, you know, doing well. Well, I mean, they lost the first game to the Celtics, I think, right? But, like, you know, they kind of breezed through the first round. And, you know, that to me is a good sign for that team to, like, you know, make that kind of impact across the whole country. I think Donovan has a lot of potential to be kind of like the face of Adidas basketball, because Adidas basketball has struggled to really find their ground in the last 2, 3, 4 years. And I think they've made some great shoes, but people just don't really they just don't get the respect that, you know, Nike shoes, especially like that kind of mid-level team shoe or like entry-level signature shoe. And so having somebody that's as likable as Donovan, I think that's a great opportunity for them to kind of reposition the brand. I'm a huge D-Rose fan. I have always been. But, you know, he, unfortunately, with so many injuries, he just can't sell shoes the way, you know, that Adidas probably hoped he would throughout these years. So,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Derek was moving units when he was healthy. Like,
D-Rose
line was legit. And that's not very many things. That's not something Adidas can say for the Howard line or Chauncey Billups or Gilbert Arena or, you know, all these other athletes who for one reason or another didn't move units. So I think Donovan has a lot more potential than Giannis just because of the personality, the accessibility. He's just, I don't know, there's something about Donovan that makes me want to wear Adidas shoes and be his friend. It's like a combo platter. He's like, he gets me on the personal level, and he gets me on my wallet level. So, like Nick was saying, there hasn't been a lot of traction behind Adidas, but, you know, I still think the Marquee Boost is a fantastic shoe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Crazy Explosive, that was another great shoe, but just, are you going to buy a Crazy Explosive, or are you going to buy a Hyperdunk? And the answer tends to be a Hyperdunk.
Yeah.
So, we'll see how these young guys move needles and, you know, impact balance sheets. But either way, both brands have plenty of young athletes on the roster that could have potential signature shoes later on, like Nick was saying, maybe quantity versus quality. Not in a bad way, but just pumping out signature shoes is going to be an interesting direction and dynamic between the major brands. I mean, not to go on too much of a tangent, but it really seems like a two-pony race. So I'm going to keep using these horse analogies between Nike and Adidas. Because, like, Under Armour has Curry, but outside of him, it's like Dennis Smith Jr. and Joel Embiid.
Yeah,
and nobody else is coming to my mind, and that's the point I'm trying to make. So, kind of a two-person race on that signature line.
Yeah,
no, you're right. That's exactly what it is. And one of those two guys will be, like I say, one of those guys will be the next step when it comes to like the number one on the list of, you know, some interesting sneakers sold. So just gotta wait and see.
Yeah, I mean, you think Embiid's ever gonna get a signature shoe to like compete with these Donovan Mitchells and the Giannis's of the world?
It'll be like the white. He has a signature shoe, but no one buys a big man shoe. This is kind of how it is.
So, I kind of disagree with that, though. I think that the thing about the big men that have come after Shaq is that none of them had the authentic, like, entertaining personality that Shaq had. And that's, you know, not to be punny, but that's, like, big shoes to fill, right? Shaq was the perfect, you know, he had the personality. He knew everything that he was doing from the very beginning. He was so much more of an entertainer than he was just a basketball player. But, you know, like, if you think of, like, Dwight Howard is kind of the first person that comes to mind, right? Because there was all those comparisons to Shaq. He was funny, but he also just never came across as playing as hard as he could or playing up to his potential. And
for sure,
never.
Of course, nobody's going to want, you know, like, you're not going to go buy a basketball sneaker because a dude is funny. You're going to go buy a basketball sneaker because the guy's funny and he's on, you know, Saturday Night Live, and he's also going to dunk on everyone in the league. And, you know, as like big physically as Dwight was, he always has had that like underlying reputation of being soft on the court. And I know that, like, you know, most people would never be able to hang playing one-on-one trying to defend Dwight Howard. But I think that kind of killed the possibility for him to even sell the shoes. Not saying that Adidas gave him great shoes, but had they given him great shoes, and you know, because a lot of this, even thinking of the D Rose, if Boost would have come along when D Rose came into the league rather than five shoes in, that would be a game changer. I think that the D Rose shoes, you know, up until probably the four, were all very fast looking, point guard looking. And at the five and so on, they became much bulkier. They became like a big man shoe because Rose kept having problems with his ankles and, you know, knee problems and all these things. So he wanted more security and stability and safety in that shoe. So I understand that. But with Dwight, there's no way he was going to, you know, sell those shoes with his personality and or his performance, right? Like, I think he just missed the mark on all accounts. With Embiid, I really do feel that he has enough personality, enough of a, like, social presence, and obviously he's a beast on the court. I think he has the potential to actually sell a big man shoe. And I also think that him being with Under Armour adds a little bit more of the underdog mentality to it that people will just naturally say, it's not going to happen, which I think gives him an advantage. And I think I almost feel like that's his whole thing, is that, you know, as much as he is like looked at as one of the best basketball players in the league probably right now, he's still not looked at as like a huge superstar in the making, you know? So that's my thoughts on it.
I mean, it's funny. My girlfriend and I were watching some playoff basketball, and there was literally three Joel Embiid commercials in a row. It was like Hulu, Sprite, and some other one. But he was funny in all of them. And then when the commercials ended, he had like 25 and 15, whatever. So it's just, he can both sell it to you personality wise and sell it to you on the court. So I like his chances of having some kind of successful endeavor with Under Armour. So it's been a couple months and nothing's really happened. So maybe next year they'll pull back the veil and we might see something, but I think Joel could do it.
Yeah, it is interesting that they've had such a, even with the, like, I don't remember, one of you guys mention like the long play on the Donovan Mitchell shoe, right? Like that shoe was introduced like way back, you know, I think they had the launch for it in December or November even, which just to me was like, I don't know if that's the strategy is to like get people's kind of opinion on the shoe before they go into fully producing it. But I feel like they're kind of, you know, I feel like it's talked about so much that, you know, the lag time on actually getting product out there is kind of dangerous.
Yeah. I mean, in one front, Adidas doesn't have a lot of marquee athletes to show off their footwork right now. I know he just got eliminated, but having him in like Alpha Bounces or, you know, a Dame 5 PE gets more visibility on other shoes. So then he can come in 2019-20 season and just kill it with the issue one all year. But it has been a long time since we saw the debut. But personally, I look every couple of weeks like, ooh, have these come out yet? Have these come out yet? It builds hype seeing the shoe and seeing the event and then it going quiet. It's like built hype for me personally. So maybe that is their strategy.
Yeah. I don't know. But I think we're going to wrap it up for this episode, and we'll save the longer discussion on, you'll just have to tune in next time to hear what we're going to talk about, 'cause I think it's going to be a really good topic. but before we get out of here, let's each pick a sneaker for this episode that we're looking at this week. I'll just go first, and I'm just going to go with those LeBron 15 Yeezys just because it's, I love.
Let me know when you get a pair.
Yeah. Yeah. I just love that LeBron is like, what'd you call it? LeBreezy?
The breezy 15.
Yeah, I just love that they're pulling old Kanye stuff out for inspiration on new shoes. It just cracks me up. So, what do you guys got going on?
It's never
going
to stop happening. And I am waiting for these no LeBron, but the LeBron 3 Oiler colorway. It's so clean, and I still need a pair of LeBron 3. So maybe this would be my lucky day.
Yeah, I like those too. How about you, Robbie?
How about you, Robbie?
Like the Kobe 4 Carpe Effing Diem. That's like my Kobe 4 for life, for the Carpe Diem. So I'm extremely excited to see those released because it's a cool colorway and a Laker colorway. So double win.
Yeah, those are pretty dope.
The quilted ankle, man.
So that pretty much wraps up this episode of the podcast. Thanks for listening. My name is Nick Engvall. You can follow me at Nick Engvall on all platforms, at Sneaker History on all platforms, and sneakerhistory.com. But guys, why don't you let them know how they can find you?
Yeah, this is Mike Giller again. You guys can find me on Sneaker History all the time. Find me on Instagram and Twitter at MadWatcher789. Robbie, what can they find you today?
You can find me panhandling for a pair of those 700 Easy Analogs underneath the handle of Robbie702 across all internet.
Cool, cool. Well, we appreciate all of you for listening. Hit us up with feedback or questions, or, you know, let us know what you were thinking about our topics this week, and add Sneaker History on Twitter, on Instagram, on YouTube. I don't really use Snapchat, but anywhere where we're at, just hit us up. Let us know what you think of things, and we'll catch you on the next time. Peace.
Cool. See you guys.
See you.
Hey, what up, guys? This is Nick again. Before you take off, I just want to let you know a couple things we're working on here at Sneaker History. We're about to start a weekly newsletter to share some of the things that we find from around the web that's interesting, entertaining, newsworthy stuff.
And instead of putting it all on social, maybe it's not worth posting on the blog, but we wanted it to just be on your radar. So it's kind of like a compilation of our favorite things from the week. And we'll be sending that out on Sundays just to make sure that you have the news from the previous week and maybe some news about the upcoming week in terms of releases, you know, changes in release dates, etc. You can sign up for that now at sneakerhistory.com. The second thing is that we finally launched a web store to sell some sneaker history merchandise. So far, we've got some tees, stickers, coffee mugs, and some other goods in the works. And the money we make from this will go to pay for hosting and production of things like this podcast. You can find that on the top right menu of our website. If you do cop some merch, be sure to tag us in your social posts so we can repost. Thanks again for all your support, and we'll catch you next time.
Hey, hey, Nick here again. Before you take off, I want to thank you for listening to the Sneaker History Podcast. Be sure to hop into our Discord to answer this episode's The Last Shot question and get to know our community of sneaker enthusiasts. If you'd like more insights on the trending topics in the sneaker world, I've also recently started a newsletter to share my knowledge from nearly two decades of experience working in the footwear industry. You can find the link to that below or go to sneakerhistory.com/newsletter. And last but not least, tell someone you like their kicks today. You never know how far a simple compliment can take you, and we all know how good it feels to be on the receiving end of some appreciation. Thank you for all the support, and we will catch you on the next episode. Peace.